Welcome to Shattering This, a program that's devoted to the most important, fastest growing, and oft times largest segment of our society. Although this morning, I'm discouraged, I'm worried, I'm dismayed. This program is devoted to those who know that the world's political, religious, military, economic, and media institutions are corrupt. Although that number appears to be shrinking. It is devoted to those who realize that both political parties and most nations, if not all nations, all religions, all military endeavors are counterproductive. And that these human institutions are not worth your allegiance and that they cannot be fixed. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, is 877-300-7645. I'm actually going to begin on a side note today, and then we're going to work our way into the main story of the day. And I'm going to apologize up front for being a bit pessimistic, a bit frustrated, even to being angry and disappointed. But let's begin with a side note. Scott, as the producer of this program, Scott, did Roger Goodell, who is the head of the NFL, did he strike his wife?
No.
Roger Goodell, who is the head of a sports league, did he condone someone striking their fiance, girlfriend, or wife?
No, he didn't condone it, no.
Roger Goodell, who is the who runs the NFL, is he a federal judge?
Definitely not.
Is he a policeman?
No, not at all.
Is he an attorney general?
Nope.
Then why is the National Organization of Women calling for Roselle to resign when he is
Goodell?
None of those things?
Because because they saw a video and it made him feel squeamish and uncomfortable, and the video didn't show you anything that we didn't know 7 months ago.
So you're telling me that the head of the National Organization of Women is so stupid that they watch a man hit a woman, and rather than going after the man who hit the woman, rather than going after the police who did not follow up on this, rather than going to the attorney general who didn't prosecute it, rather than going to the judge who dismissed it,
hold on,
that wait, they want to go to the NFL to condemn the NFL for this crime and to have its head resign?
Yeah, they are that dumb, but hold on here. Ray Rice did have a charge. He did go through the legal process. He agreed to a plea deal that put him in a first-time offenders program. And they treated him like a first-time offender. The police report says that she had no visible injuries or anything like that. They both refused to go any medical attention.
If Ray Rice's treatment was not sufficient, if his initial penalty for cold cocking his fiance in an elevator. Now, she's a witch. That doesn't mean that she deserved to be hit, but she was spitting at him. She was snarling at him. She was slapping him. She was scratching him. She's somebody that if I were associated with, I would have walked out of the elevator and left her and said, "You have a good rest of your life. It's been not so much fun knowing you, but don't you ever contact me again." But be that as it may, if somebody has a problem with coddling those who are perpetrators of domestic violence, why isn't the National Organization on Women going after the Attorney General in Atlantic City, the Justice Department staff in Atlanta City, the police in Atlantic City, if they think that this was mishandled?
I got a better question. Why are they waiting 6 to 7 months before they start making a big deal about this?
Why is the National Organization on Women wants attention? And when I listened yesterday to those idiots that conduct the, seems like, 1,000 sports talk shows today because nobody wants to actually air a meaningful talk show. They only air these thoughtless talk shows with moronic hosts and their participants, those who call into the show, that I swear must have 3 brain cells collectively amongst all of them. It's pathetic.
Oh, the...
And to listen to that yesterday and have everybody come down on Roger Goodell. Now, personally, I don't give a rat's hoot about Roger Goodell. He's overpaid at $44 million. And at $44 million, you ought to have broad shoulders. But the fact of the matter is that he's not guilty of a crime, of advancing criminal behavior, or of even failing to take action. It's a business. It's a sports league. It's not part of the justice system.
Oh, it's part of the moral compass of America.
Yeah,
it
football?
Has to be. Yeah, no,
yeah,
it has
right.
to be. It must be. It must be because we have...
So entertainment is part of America's moral compass. No wonder America is so lost.
Well, exactly. But it must be because we have congressmen now asking to know what... They're getting involved with this. You got
so
all these
Congress, who oversees the U.S. military, where sexual violence is greater than any other part of American society, and rather than calling for a complete overhaul of the military justice system to stop the pandemic of sexual abuse and rape in the U.S. military, they want to have an investigation of who had what video when. For a football player?
Yeah, yeah. And for somebody who is technically has, he came out, he said, I was wrong. And he went into this diversion program or whatever it was called. And he's been going through that. He's still going through that. And technically, he got treated as if he was a first-time offender, which he was. Up until this point, Ray Rice was described nothing as...
So he's now a second-time offender because we've now seen elevator video of the first-time offender?
But that's just it. This isn't the first time we saw the elevator video. When it was first reported, they had video of him dragging her out of the out of the elevator.
Yeah,
she was dead weight. She was dead weight. That doesn't just happen. You don't just pass out and, you know.
So, if anything, the NFL was much tougher and responded more appropriately than did the justice system in Atlantic City. It at least took him, hit him in the pocketbook, and precluded him from playing in their games when Atlantic City says, yeah, why don't you go to counseling?
Yeah.
So why are people calling for?
And for to be fair,
the commissioner to resign.
Because they're idiots.
They're idiots. And we've got a country of idiots, and it was ubiquitous. Every sports talk host, all the way up to Keith Olbermann, who's got his new show. He is so.
Oh, he's an idiot.
Preposterous, but
moral indignation.
All the way, it's like what we have in America now at the highest levels of media is a bunch of parrots all playing the same little politically correct game, all thoughtless, unthinking, ignorant morons talking to obviously unthinking, immoral mental midgets. And speaking of that, everything that I predicted that the President of the United States would say and claim yesterday turned out to be true. Now, I'm not a prophet. I don't claim to be a prophet. I don't want to be called a prophet. But everything I said that man would do, every lie, it's almost as if I had written the speech. It was precisely as I claimed it would be. I would like to begin there with our beginning of our next segment. But before we go there, this is why I come to you with a heavy heart. I knew that Barack Hussein Obama was going to lie to the American people to justify a new war. And I will tell you exactly what the consequence of that war is going to be. But what I was extraordinarily disappointed to read. Is it the overwhelming majority of Americans have been beguiled to believing that lashing out militarily at the Islamic State is the right thing to do? And I believe the number is under 15%. I think it's actually 13% of Americans who are properly informed and rational, who know that this is a colossal mistake. 13%. I have to tell you, Scott, I came within a whisper this morning of sending you an email and saying there is no point to doing this anymore. If only 13% of Americans know that the President of the United States lied and know that attacking the Islamic State is going to be as counterproductive as was invading Iraq, invading Afghanistan, bombing Libya. 13% of you, with 61% enthusiastically in support of that which is suicidal. I came within a whisper this morning of saying, why should I devote my time? And you may not, and I don't have any issue with people saying, you know, my time isn't worth anything anyway. You know, it's worth what I'm being paid for it, which is nothing. But it is valuable to me. And when I realize that on a subject that we have been talking about, writing about, now for 13 years, and only 13% of you have your eyes open, that's frustrating. Now, I can tell you that number, 13%, will grow to being 65 or 70% over the course of the next 2 years. But it ought not start off so low. You will all reverse course. And you will so because what I'm going to tell you is going to happen, will occur. We are shooting ourselves in the head. Obama's position, yes to airstrikes, yes to advisors, no to a ground war, appears to be in line with American public opinion, I'm sorry to say. Attitudes have shifted lately, with an increased willingness to launch strikes against the Islamic State, first in Iraq and now in Syria. But polls also suggest that Americans still staunchly oppose another ground war. After a decade of bloody and multi-trillion dollar conflicts that made bad situations much worse. Yesterday's speech was the latest step down an improbable path for a presidency that sprang from an anti-war platform that received, laughably, a Nobel Peace Prize in its infancy for absolutely nothing. As a matter of fact, the only thing that the president did initially was to inspire Muslims to revolt. He is the author of what is called the Arab Spring, but is really the Islamic Reformation. In his speech to reset the tone of the West towards Islam, in the heart of Islam, amongst the leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood, at the very place that they were founded, among the leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood, he told Muslims that this was their time, that they would be unopposed, that their religion was indeed great. And from that, we had Tunisia go from a secular state to an Islamic state, now providing a disproportionate number of the jihadists fighting in Syria and Iraq. We've had a revolution in Libya where a secular dictator was overthrown by a cadre of fundamentalist Islamic terrorists. And now the country is engaged in absolute anarchy. You can't even call it civil war because there are too many fundamentalist Islamic terrorist groups fighting each other to even reference the word civil. Egypt has had its first popular election, and 70% of the population voted for the most fundamentalist Islamic parties, the Muslim Brotherhood and the Salafist Party. And then they've had a military coup. The country is completely bankrupt.
Hold on. Are you telling me that these aren't just radical Islamists that are doing all this stuff? It would have to be Islam? Wouldn't there be more people?
Fundamentalist, pure. There is no organization on the planet today more fundamentally Islamist than the Muslim Brotherhood. Second to them would be the Islamic State. You look at what we have done. What Obama did is he was the catalyst for all of these wars, for the religious war in Syria, and now for its spread into Iraq. The upheaval that we're witnessing amongst fundamentalist Muslims to overthrow the Pakistani government. The rise of the Taliban, again, in Afghanistan. It's all directly related, as is the rise of Boko Haram in Nigeria, to Barack Hussein Obama inspiring Muslims that this was their time and igniting an Islamic revolution, a reformation that is devouring the world. The catalyst appeared to be brutal images. This is the catalyst for changing American public opinion from the Islamic rebellion that has gobbled up territory in eastern Syria and western Iraq. Notably, the faked videos of American journalists being beheaded. Not only were those videos faked, knowingly faked, and there was nothing the least bit graphic about them. The fact of the matter is that the only reason that some of the images from those videos were actually seen is because they weren't graphic enough to ban. And yet, those fake executions, as I predicted, are now being used to galvanize American sentiment for war. Now, frauds inciting war has always been part of the American experience. The sinking of the Lusitania for World War I, where the government leaders, Woodrow Wilson, Colonel House in the United States, bankers, as well as the leaders in the United Kingdom, particularly Churchill, orchestrated its sinking to encourage Americans to join World War I. The Spanish-American War, it's the same story. American public opinion has shifted, even from just a few weeks ago. An NBC Wall Street Journal poll said that 61% declared striking, this says, ISIL. And by the way, it's interesting. The Obamanator used ISIL throughout his speech. He only said Islamic State once, and that was to, and we're going to read his speech here in a moment, was to say that it was not Islamic. And yet, following the president's speech, the media is going to return to something it has not used in months. He is the only person using this, and now all of the media will follow him. And they're going to do it, and he is doing it, all to hide the truth. It's the Islamic State. It is Islamic. It has never been, and will never be, ISIL. 61% of Americans in the poll that was taken last night by NBC and the Wall Street Journal said that they believed that striking the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria would be in the national interest, versus a minuscule 13% who disagreed. 61 verses 13. 13% who have their eyes open, who are rational. 61% who are oblivious, counterproductive, suicidal, politically influenced morons. If that's you among them, wear your sign proudly. A year ago, respondents answered with a deafening no when asked whether the U.S. should attack Syria's Assad regime. Only 21% supported action in Syria in August of 2013. It is so common for Americans to be inspired by lies to galvanize around war. Look at our past. Look at the lie about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Look at the lie about Afghanistan being the cause and source of 9/11. Look at the lie about the Gulf of Tonkin incident for Vietnam. It goes on and on and on. And now it's two fake executions. Galvanizing American stupidity for yet another war. Now I'm going to turn to the president's speech, and I'm going to read it word for word. But before I do, we have Matt, having called in from Wisconsin. He's been very patient, and I know that he wishes to issue a comment on the president's speech. And so before we read it, Matt, the floor is yours. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much. I was completely disgusted when I heard the opening lines of the speech last night. The lie about what the Islamic State is and is not. And then just realizing that this is simply the latest round in his play for Syria. It's nothing more.
And yes.
I know.
And to be the commander-in-chief of the world. That's what he wants. He wants to be viewed as the world savior.
Yeah.
I mean, his initial statement he read is read. I'm going to read it. In fact, let me read it exactly as he said it, and then because I think it presents him as he wants to be perceived, as the world's commander in chief and the savior. My fellow Americans, tonight I speak to you about what the United States will do with our friends and allies to degrade and ultimately destroy the terrorist group known as ISIL. I'm going to read the next line here in a moment. The United States can temporarily degrade the Islamic State. We cannot destroy it. And the fact is that the more we attempt to degrade it with bullets and bombs, the more it will grow. There has never been and will never be a terrorist organization known as ISIL. It was the Islamic State in Iraq, born out of the U.S. invasion. It became the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria when weapons were being handed out like candy to bring down Assad. And now it is simply the Islamic State. And here he is speaking to us as the leader of not just the United States, but also American friends and allies. This is the next line. It's repulsive. As commander-in-chief, my highest priority is the security of the American people. He wants to present himself as savior. By the way, that has never been his highest priority. Never will be his highest priority. Selling weapons to Muslims by the hundreds of billions, inspiring the Islamic Reformation that has swept the globe. He is lethal to American security. He has destroyed the U.S. economy, bankrupt our future, destroyed the healthcare system. This man is an overt liar and awesomely incompetent and disingenuous a megalomaniac. And I don't say that as a right-wing Republican. I'm as opposed to George Bush as I am to Obama. I say it because it's the truth. So he is coming at us as the commander-in-chief, the protector, therefore, savior of the American people. So I think that plays directly into your comments. And even before we get to his definition of ISIL, which we're going to spend many programs on.
You know, you mentioned the aspect of being a conservative Republican. I can't help but notice that they basically played right into his hands and goaded him into this. They did their part. I just watching all of the commentary and the usual cast of characters that do the talking for them.
Right.
They goaded him into this completely.
Correct. They want to be the hawks. They want to be considered the supporters of the U.S. military. And so the Republicans are even more hawkish than he is.
Yeah.
So, yeah. This is a situation in America where while you have a president that is probably the most dishonest, disingenuous, caustic, counterproductive in the nation's history, those who oppose him on the other side of the aisle have no more credibility than he does.
Right.
It is a time when Americans need to recognize that they ought not be in support of anything America says or does. There's no political party to ally with. America can't be fixed politically. It's not about voting the bums out and bringing in a new cast of characters. They'll be no better. It's bad, horrible, and worse. That is our lot. Let's continue on with this. Over the last several years, so he only wants to talk about his presidency. Over the last several years, we have consistently taken the fight to terrorists who threaten our country. Now, I want you to tell me how we had to take the fight to them if they were threatening us. And we had to go kill them in other countries. Because obviously, if we're killing a guy hiding out in Pakistan, if we're killing somebody hiding out in Yemen, if we're killing somebody hiding out in some godforsaken cave someplace or hovel, how is it that they're guilty of having attacked us? It appears to me that we're doing all the attacking. That not one of the people that he killed an American. We took out Osama bin Laden and much of Al-Qaeda's leadership in Afghanistan and Pakistan. Yeah, we killed Osama bin Laden. But Osama bin Laden didn't conceive the plan of 9/11. Ramzi Youssef did. Osama bin Laden didn't staff the plan for 9/11, most of the perpetrators came out of the Al-Qaeda Mosque in Hamburg, Germany. He didn't fund it. He didn't plan it. He didn't conceive of it. He was just one of many excited Muslims that it happened. And Al-Qaeda exists only because America conceived it. America built Al-Qaeda from nothing when it rented the Taliban from Pakistan back during Jimmy Carter's proxy war against the Soviet Union's influence in Afghanistan. That's when Al-Qaeda was born, and it was conceived and funded by America, by Jimmy Carter, Zygmunt Brzezinski, Robert Gates. Why not tell the truth? That Osama bin Laden was an American creation, as was Al-Qaeda. He said, we targeted Al-Qaeda's affiliate in Yemen. We killed Americans in Yemen. Americans who had never killed any Americans. And we killed far more civilians than we did Islamists. And when did the President of the United States gained jurisdiction to call for the murder of Americans or anybody living elsewhere in the world who had never committed a crime in the United States. No investigation, no due diligence, no due process, no indictment, no trial, no conviction. We just go directly to murder.
He said last night that he doesn't need Congress's approval on this and things like that, which Congress is pretty much going to approve it anyways, but like that's a pretty...
He's the murderer in chief. Sure.
That's
murderer in chief. He's the... you know, when you're savior, you can't have your hands tied by lesser humans. We've eliminated a top commander of its affiliate in Somalia. Al-Qaeda did not have an affiliate in Somalia. Al-Qaeda didn't even have an affiliate in Yemen. Well, the Yemen group referred to themselves as Al-Qaeda. In Somalia, they didn't. And he knows for certain, as I know, as you know, that Osama bin Laden despised those who used his name in Yemen. Al-Shabaab has never been associated with Al-Qaeda. And Osama bin Laden routinely wrote letters to Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula and said, don't use my name. Don't pretend to be associated with me because you're not. They never had any association other than they used the same name. He went on to say, we've done so while bringing more than 140,000 American troops home from Iraq and drawing down our forces in Afghanistan, where our combat mission will end later this year. And, of course, what he did not say is that Iraq now is completely broken. It's engaged in the worst of imaginable civil war. It's a religious civil war of which there are three principal antagonists. The Sunnis, who are united as a union of the Islamic State, under the Islamic State of the Awakening Program, which were the Sunni warlords that America empowered and armed under the Awakening Program. The Iranian-backed Iraqi Shiite government, with both its militias and its military, both equipped by the United States. The revolutionary forces of Iran. So you've got the revolutionary forces of Iran, the Shia militants and militant groups, which are in the hundreds of thousands strong and armed to the teeth. And you've got the American-backed army of Iraq, which is controlled completely by Shias. So that's the Shia side. On the Sunni side, you have the Islamic State of Iraq in harmony with and partnership with the Awakening Program, which was the Sunni warlords that were part of the Saddam Hussein regime. And then you have the Kurds, which America is arming separately. And this moron of a president talks about how excited he is that there's a universal, inclusive government when we're arming three different sides in this conflict. Now, there are two other victims in this conflict that aren't participants in the war preparations. They are Christians who have essentially been annihilated and Zoroastrians. And so in Iraq, when our troops left Iraq, and it's not because our troops left, this was inevitable. The moment we deposed Saddam Hussein, this was a foregone conclusion. Iraq disintegrated into this kind of mayhem. Total and complete anarchy. And there is no way to put it back together. It never will be unified. Ever. Under any circumstances, no matter the cost in lives or money. That's the consequence of what America did in Iraq, but he didn't want to admit that. Then he went on to say Thanks to our military and counterterrorism professionals, America is safer. Bull. America has never been more vulnerable. We're vulnerable because we spend $1 trillion a year on our military, on our former military that are broken, the people that were broken in our military, like the 650,000 Americans who are claiming $6,000 a month in disability for post-traumatic stress syndrome, the enormity of the cost of the Veterans Administration, the military itself at some $650 billion, and then this gargantuan spy infrastructure that is controlled by the U.S. military, the CIA and NSA, the National Ground Intelligence Center, et al. $1 trillion a year, bankrupting the country, making it vastly more vulnerable. The militarization of America's police because the weapons that were squandered over there were brought back. Apache helicopters and armored personnel carriers now flying over America's towns and driving down America's streets. All because of what we have done with our military. Our military has made America vastly more vulnerable. We broke Libya, turning it into a terrorist hellhole with terrorism, Islamic terrorism, spreading throughout Africa, making it more vulnerable. Our military empowered the takeover of Egypt. Our military provided the weapons through Qatar and Saudi Arabia to turn a political protest into a religious civil war in Syria. And, of course, we broke Iraq, spinning it into chaos. The opposite of what this man said.